This episode is brought to you by Summer School Electronics. With pedals like the Snow Day Delay, the Pep Rally Fuzz, the Trash Panda, and my personal favorite, the Science Fair, which is two classic dirt pedals in one with a mid-boosted overdrive on one side, a black lab rat circuit on the other, and a blend knob to blend between them to find the perfect classic stacked dirt sound you're looking for, it's hard not to find something you'll love. Mark builds all of his pedals by hand in Syracuse, New York, where he also works as a full-time educator. In addition to the super fun graphics on their pedals, Mark also offers custom artwork. Want your dog's face on a pedal? He can do it. Want your face on a pedal? He can make that happen too. Go over to summerschoolelectronics.com and make sure to tell them that 40 Watt Podcast sent you. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back, 40 Watt Podcast. Here we are, episode 41. So, took a little bit of a break last week. I really appreciate all the folks that reached out and messaged me and, words of support and encouragement and said, you know, take care of yourself and all those things. And I did. I took some time to sort of relax, sort of to not, you know, it's stressful time for me in my day job. We're at the end of, this is going to be super boring and super nerdy. We're at the end of our fiscal year and I have to wrap up all of fiscal year 2021's paperwork and financials and documents. And I have to get ready to start fiscal year 2022 and budget requests and balancing and board meetings. And it's so boring. It's the stuff that nobody understands goes on behind the scenes with libraries and how difficult it can be. You know, finding an auditor, how boring. So I got all that wrapped up, sort of still in the midst of some of it, but stress levels way down. Super excited to be back and podcasting. And getting back to y'all talking guitar, I've been playing a little guitar today. Actually, it's been really, really good. Any day I can spend, you know, a half hour, hour and a half with a guitar in my hands is a good day. So want to take a moment. We're going to talk here at the top. I'm going to tell you about all the things you need to do. This is the call to action portion of the podcast, as it were, if you want to get into the marketing terminology of it. What you need to do, I don't know where you're listening to this. If you're listening, if you're watching, I know where you are. You're on YouTube. So go down, click the bell icon, click the subscribe button, click the thumbs up button, leave a comment. Tell me what you think. Tell me what you don't think. Comments, criticisms, critiques, questions. I don't know. Leave your favorite recipe. I don't, I'll read it. I'll give it a shot. I'll cook it. I'll tell you what. You leave your favorite recipe and I'll record a video of me cooking it. Look at that. No sardines, please. But if you are listening to this podcast, please do me a favor, rate and review the podcast wherever it is you're listening. That helps other listeners find the podcast who might like it or who like similar things. They may not like the podcast, but that's great. They'll give it a shot. So if you really enjoy the show, there are two ways you can help support the show. One is free. You can share this podcast with your friends. You can tell people you know who are into gear and into guitar and into that kind of stuff. Hey, there's this podcast with this weird dude from Mississippi. He talks about guitars all the time. You can just go listen to him. That's awesome. Now, if you want to spend a little of your hard-earned money and help keep this show going, you can go over to Patreon. Patreon.com/40WattPodcast, where for as little as $3 a month, you can help keep this show going. You'll get a little bit of swag. I'll mail you a little something, some buttons, some stickers, some stuff like that, a thank you card, those kinds of things. For $5 a month, you get to support the show and you get extra content every week with my guests, or sometimes it'll be just me. Sometimes it'll be, I still haven't done, favorite album, some top 10 lists, which may happen in some future episodes. We're going to talk about some top 10 episodes or albums all time, 90s, whatever. I love 90s. That's going to be hard. But you could go crazy too over there over at Patreon. We got a $50 tier where you can $50 a month. You and I will sit down. We'll have Zoom guitar lessons or bass lessons or piano lessons or music theory, or we'll just shoot the shit for an hour, you know, whatever you want to do. It's your money. I mean, so hope you go over there. Hope you want to support the show. 40wattpodcast.com. Has all those links, all of our social media, so you can find us, follow us, join the group on Facebook, all those things. I'm a little rusty. Obviously, haven't done this in a couple of weeks, so that took a little longer than I'm used to. But now I'm going to introduce my guest, and we're going to get into a little conversation, because that's really what you came here for, not to listen to me rattle on for 4 minutes. So, guest today is from Working Class Music, Jason Mays, hanging out.
Hello.
How are you doing, Jason?
I'm hanging in there. I'm doing good. I cannot complain.
Well, or as I like to say, as you know, you're in the South, could complain, but it wouldn't do any good.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So
I too am familiar with that.
So Jason, we actually met at Summer NAMM. So in Nashville, we got to meet and hang out, hung out with all of the Working Class Music folks, got to finally meet Tia there on the last day that we were there. Xander and, Justin, did I get that right? Justin
and Nelson.
And Nelson, that's right. Ah, man, there was another.
He was in and out of there. So
oh, gotcha.
He was like,
he was scooting around doing his thing.
Yeah.
I'm still upset at Justin because he found that Fano before I did. He better still be loving that guitar.
Oh, he is.
Oh,
he
good, is. Good.
Like we were talking about that today, actually. Because he was actually looking at this PRS Bela, and I was just like, do you like it as much as the Novo and that Fano? And he's like, no.
Yeah.
There's your answer.
There's your answer. Like, God, that Fano is such a great guitar. Oh, so we hung out at Carter Vintage Music. We hung out at Kevin Equitz's house for the barbecue there that he threw for a bunch of us hanging out. It was a good time. Really enjoyed getting to talk to you. It was nice to see some other Southerners. I was around too many West Coasters there for a little while there. I was starting to think surfing was a real sport. sorry, Ryan. but yeah, so got really interested. You guys have a YouTube channel, Working Class Music. Really appreciate y'all's show because y'all are just very, very, very real. There's no like, there's showmanship, but there's not like smoke and mirrors. It's like you guys are just very real about the gear you're working with. So for the listeners that aren't familiar, and maybe even some of those that are, tell me a little bit about you, how you got into music, playing guitar, and whatever possessed you to get in the world of YouTube.
Oh, okay. Well, let's start with how I got into music. According to my mom, I came out of the womb playing music. That's not true. she was just like, you always like banging on stuff. And I remember when I was little, I had this mini drum kit, like when I was about 3 or 4, and that was my first true musical experience. After that, I put a hole in that drum kit, so I never picked up drums again. I thought that was it. I thought I broke it. So,
oh yeah.
Then in high school, I was always that kid that I would try to do more than everyone else. And so I took on a multitude of instruments, and I thought I could sing, but I could not. so I took choir, took on a multitude of instruments at the same time, and realized that probably wasn't the best idea. So, you know, as it goes, it's just like you, jack of all trades, master of none.
Sure.
So I learned pretty much in high school and college that I didn't want to do marching band.
Smart move.
Yeah.
No offense, yeah. Marching band folks.
Yeah, I didn't want to do that. I realized that I was more interested in like creating my own thing and not really learning other people's stuff. So in college, I started a band with a bunch of friends. It's a weird time. It was a cool time because it was my formative year. So it was just getting into songwriting, per se. And that band was called The November Story. We were a 3-piece, myself on guitar, my other friend JP on guitar, and my friend Matt on vocals. And, we were just local around Tallahassee. You know, we thought we were good. And I think we were, like, some of the songs were pretty cool for back then. And it was cool. So after that, playing in the local music scene, I got to meet some other friends from out of town. And I want to say around this time, like, this is where the multitude of instruments come back into play. One of my friends, he joined this band in Pensacola. To give some of you some some knowledge, that's 200 miles. Like, so me being me at the time, I was just like, well, you know, they're cool. I want to join them. Like, and they're going through this whole rebranding and everything else. Like, so I quit school to join this band because I was like, they're going to be touring. And I believe that they were going to be huge. And we were called Cerevelle. We were like this post-hardcore Chiodos, A Day to Remember, Oceana, Rise Core music. And, you know, it was cool, like, for the time. And it taught me a lot. Admittedly, I wasn't the best keyboardist, but I was always just like, hey, I want to make cool sounds and kind of get into soundscaping. And, you know, from there, I met some of my friends in this band called Of Machines, and they were signed to Rise Records, and we became really good friends. And before they broke up, they had asked me to join and be on keys, which I don't know why. But so that happened, and then after that, there was just, you know, in terms of music, I started working for other bands. I worked for like Mayday Parade and Go Radio and, you know, those type of Warped Tour bands. And
sure.
I still got to see a bit of the world that way. And then after that, I came back home to Tallahassee. And for a little bit, I just started working music retail. And then from there, someone who I'd rather not say, because he is very problematic in more ways than one. He was having issues and he got kicked out of both of his bands. I mean, I can't really dance around it, but
sure.
It was this, if listeners are familiar with Dance Gavin Dance or Amorosa, it was Johnny Craig. And he was starting this other band. And at the time I was auditioning for a different band. And he was in a lot of heat because of his whole MacBook scandal. So if you want to Google that, yeah.
Love a good scandal. We like to cover scandals here on the 40 Watt podcast.
So, he hit me back up after he had left rehab and, you know, the knowledge of him being clean. And, you know, he asked me, you know, he was starting this band, or rather his management and his label were starting this band for him because he was still highly profitable, as I would say, despite his troubled past. And, you know, he asked me to come and join. And originally I was going to be the third guitarist because I was like, okay, that's cool. Like, you know, that's what I kind of want to do. Just be the guy, the ambience guy, like the Ed O'Brien or the James Iha. Like, that's what I wanted to do. And then management was like, hey, we're not doing that. You can't have three guitars. So either, so somebody's got to go. And so I was like, all right, well, I'll play bass, you know, thinking that, I can play bass, you know, I can do this. And one thing that didn't dawn on me was bass in a whole different, like heavier genre is not as simple as people think it is. So, long story short from that part, moved out to California. We were on tour promoting the first record and whatnot. And I quit mid-tour / got the boot. Because quote unquote, on my end of the thing, I was not happy. It was a very, very rough time. And they were not happy with my performance as, you know, a bass player. And I was like, well, I'm kind of a guitarist, and, you know, that's what I do. So, you know, we split ways and we were cool. Or at least I thought I was, with some. And it was funny because when I quit in Atlanta, and I just was like, you know what, I'm just going to stay here. I'm just going to stay in Atlanta. And like my friends, Mike and Spencer, they were in this band called Native Sons. And I was like, you know, I've always wanted to be in that band with them. Like, I always wanted to write music with like Mike and Spencer. And so I just joined, and that was That and you know, I've been here ever since. The band has broken up, gone through another band, and we're currently on a different band. But this, I went from Native Sons, and then we had our own issues with that, and went to a band called Culture Cough, had our own issues on that, and now we're in this weird, I wouldn't say weird, because as we've gotten older, I kind of approach music as fun. I don't want to tour. I don't want to compete with other bands. So I started this project called Young Mountain with my friend Matt Mulkey, as a way of coping with the loss of my father and dealing with a couple of mental health issues. And then now it's turned into a band. Like we dropped a music video. Got a really cool publicist too, and now we're, I want to say we're serious, because we are serious, because after being in the music industry, I feel like there are certain ways you should go about releasing your music, and I've kind of taken the serious mentality with that. So and it's been pretty cool, because this with Young Mountain, it was the first time that I was creatively in charge, and a lot of my influences, well, more so on the demos than the final product, were very obvious. And like, it was cool. Like it was, it was something that was cool, because my friends came in, rearranged the songs, and be blunt, they made it a lot more marketable than what I was like, I want to be This Will Destroy You, and I want to write, very emotional, like sad ambient music. And Matt and Mike were just like, hey, we're putting vocals on this, so we're gonna change things. And from there, it actually leads to the YouTube channel, because while doing this, I met Tia, and Tia and I, it's funny because as different as we are, we're pretty similar in that regard. So, and she and I had already always tossed around the idea of like doing a YouTube channel, because one thing, that always bothered me more so, which is funny because I'm friends with the people that I kind of aim to be like now. But one thing that always bothered me about the YouTube community, the gear community, was the lack of diversity. It was always like some white dude playing some blues riff on like a Strymon Big Sky,
I'm
and
right
I'm
here. I'm
like,
right here, Jason.
no,
I'm
not
right here.
that.
I'm just kidding.
But it was always like, they would get these cool pedals, and the thing is, it's just like there's a, like for me, I would look at it like, man, like I wish there was more representation, and I wish there were more people on YouTube doing this that I could relate to. And and not even purely on a skin color thing, because like I remember falling in love with Emily Starcaster video and be like, she's cool, I want to hang out with her. And then there's Mike Adams. I remember him just talking about Jazz Masters and Star Trek, and I was like, he's cool, I want to be friends with him. And then Ryan, I was like, oh, he's playing a Squire Jazz Master, he likes to drip, I want to be friends with him. And and then there's the other side of that, which I'm not going to say, like they're very niche. And so Tia and I just kept tossing around the idea of like, hey, we should review gear. We should review gear, because we both work at a music store. So we're both around gear all the time. And, she is a phenomenal guitarist, way better than myself. And, it was just one of those things of like, hey, we should do it. So I tossed around the idea with Xander, and Xander tossed around the idea with Nelson. And it was just one of those things of, it was one of those things that just came together, and everybody gets along. And now we're like, we have our group chat, and like, the show is for us is just fun, but the main thing that we want to get out of it is to have a bit more representation, not only for people of color, but different genders, sexuality, whatever. We want them to feel included in the gear dialogue, because it's easy to just pull up a video of something, and then it's just like, okay, cool. For instance, I was I'm trying to think of the pedal. It was a reverb pedal. Of course it was a reverb
Of
pedal.
course, it was a
Yeah,
reverb pedal.
Yeah. It was, I want to say it was the slow, like,
Oh, yeah.
just kind of seeing like either worship crowd or like I remember some demo of like some guy doing blues licks, and I'm just like, dude, that's literally like a super ambient pedal. Like, what are you doing? So it was just one of those things of where we started it, and we just wanted to be included, and we want other people to feel included. We went in with the mindset of, well, we started with the mindset of like, let's just do affordable gear, for the working class,
Yeah.
and we're going to get back around to that because we've definitely veered off that a little bit, and just for people to feel included, because the thing is, we want people to feel like they're in the room with us, and like, that's something we've tried to achieve and keep it very real in that sense. Like, we are definitely very, we don't want to sugarcoat anything. So,
Right.
what you see is definitely what you get. And our personalities, especially the dynamic between Tia and myself, is well captured. Like that's pretty much Tia. Like that's pretty much our dynamic in real life. And like, it's been cool. It's been really cool. Like, we've made a lot of friends doing this. We received a lot of support, which I
Yeah.
was blown away by, only because like I only because I've had good experiences with people and companies, and I've had bad experiences. And I didn't go out, I didn't want to do this for some egotistical, narcissistic reason, like, oh, I want to be the Black Rick Shaw. I want to be, I want to be like guitar famous. Like, it wasn't that. It was just like, hey, I want to have fun. I like talking about gear. Tia likes talking about gear. We're nerds, and let's just have fun and like get people interested in gear and like get people interested in playing music. And because I think that's yeah, I think that's that sums it up. And now it's just like, through that, I met you.
Yeah.
I met Emily, met Ryan. Haven't met Mike in person, but I hope to, because he and I are going to have some very Star Trek centric conversations. Star Trek and Jazz Masters, that's the way to my heart.
Well then.
And Popeyes, but
Ooh. But have you
yeah,
tried that
so
but have you tried that Burger King chicken sandwich yet?
no, like I think the last time I ate Burger King was like, yeah, it was that long ago.
Look,
It was a while.
I went to Omaha about 2 weeks before we were in Nashville for Summer NAMM, and my wife and I were driving through a town super late at night. We had not had dinner. We were, long road trip, super hungry, getting on each other's nerves. We had to get some food soon.
Oh, you guys were getting
And
hangry.
the only thing we found was Burger King. And I was like, I hate Burger King. I really do. I don't, it's not my thing, but I saw they had this new spicy chicken sandwich, and I was like, you know what? I've never had that on, the pictures of course look great, 'cause the pictures always look great at
Yeah, of
restaurants.
course they look great. Like, yeah.
And I got it, and I'm going to tell you that sandwich, it's the only thing I'll eat at Burger King. It rivals. I think it and the Popeyes spicy chicken sandwich are the best spicy chicken sandwiches at fast food restaurants. And it's a
Oh,
very
wow.
close battle. It's very close.
I'm gonna have to say that, because I'm gonna have to try that now, because
Yeah.
I think Popeyes has the best spicy chicken sandwich.
Agreed. It's close. It depends on my day of the week. Like, the Burger King one is crispier. And so if I want like a really crispy chicken sandwich, in fact, I haven't had dinner tonight, so that might be a thing. But so sorry, I sidetracked that entire conversation.
Oh no, you're fine. You're fine, because I was going to be like, oh, if we're going to talk about food, then we got to get this question out of the way. In-N-Out or Whataburger?
Oh man. Okay, so here's the deal. Tell me the city in America where I get to have to only where I only have where sorry, let me words are so hard. So show me the city in America where I can get both and I'll actually make a decision. But the thing is, usually if there's Whataburger, there's no In-N-Out. If there's
Yep.
In-N-Out, there's no Whataburger.
No
So
one.
I never have to worry about that decision, because I will take both all day long.
We'll be right back.
This podcast is supported in part by String Joy Strings. I'm a snob, at least that's what people tell me. I'm never okay with good enough, and that's where String Joy Strings come in. They're better than good enough. They're the best. String Joy are making some of the finest strings available today right up the road from me in Nashville, Tennessee. They offer custom sets, balanced tension, coated strings, the works. If you need it, they can probably make it happen. You should be using String Joy Strings, and if you're going to order from them, you really could help this podcast out by clicking the affiliate link down in the description or show notes below. You get amazing strings, I get a little bit of that back to help the show keep going. It's a win-win situation. Get your String Joy Strings today.
It's an answer. You're the first person to answer like that.
Yeah.
Usually everybody's like one or the other.
Yeah, no, it's I'll take either one. The only place I think that you will run into an issue is in Texas, because there are In-N-Outs in Texas. It's the only place, you know, east of like Utah that you can get it. And so you will run into towns that have Whataburger and In-N-Out. And so Texans that listen, and I know there are a few of you, y'all have got a tough choice. I don't want to make it. Here in Mississippi, that we get Whataburger, and that's really about it. And there's not even that many of them. I think there's like three Whataburgers in the whole state. So, yeah, there's two in Jackson, Mississippi. Yeah, the one in Jackson. It's funny because it can also vary by restaurant. There's two in Jackson. And one of them I would not go to if it were the last food on earth. It's just the food. Both times I've eaten there, I give a restaurant at least two tries, and both times it was just not good. And I wasn't eating it weird off times either. It was like at lunchtime, so I was like, ah. But the other one, and I'm not going to name them names. If you live in Jackson, you can go try them both, and you tell me if one stands out above the other. The other one, the food has always been on point, even at like ridiculous hours of the day. So.
Well, you're lucky though, because every time I ask that question, I always have to tell people, well, I live in Atlanta, so we don't have either. the nearest Whataburger is Macon, Georgia. And I was talking with a customer at work the other day, and I was like, you know, I've thought about just driving down to Macon. That's like an hour and a half to 2 hours drive.
Oh my God.
Just for Whataburger.
Yeah, that would be me for Jackson. 2 hours is the nearest. Well, is there one in Tuscaloosa? There might be one in Tuscaloosa. That's an hour and 15. So I don't know. I do like Whataburger. I do love In-N-Out. I don't want to have to choose. So I'll just steer clear of the whole state of Texas and I'll never have to worry about it.
Oh, there you go.
Because I think it's in Dallas. They definitely have both in Dallas. There's been a few more In-N-Outs that opened up. And the story, and if one of the listeners knows, they can tell me if I'm wrong. But I believe the reason Dallas got In-N-Out is because the guy who owns In-N-Out, his daughter went to college in Dallas. And so she was there, and they started franchising there because she was there. That's all I know. I may be wrong. Maybe I'm making this up. But I know that Dallas, for a long time, was the only place you could find In-N-Out that wasn't West Coast. So.
Yeah.
But y'all got okay. I mean, y'all got a Waffle House per square mile over there in Atlanta.
We do. And that's the one thing that... Hell, just the East Coast in general, like especially like with North Florida going onwards, it's just Waffle House central. And I do love me some Waffle House. I would take Waffle House over IHOP any day.
Absolutely. IHOP is the breakfast equivalent of Applebee's, and I don't like either one of them really if I can avoid it.
Yeah,
they're plastic.
See, well, the thing that's funny about it is like because Tia took me to this because she was picking me up from the airport, and I was like, yeah, let's get some breakfast food. And I was thinking we're going to go to Waffle House.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I know the service is probably not going to be the best depending on which Waffle House you go to, because there's a crazy equilibrium. Like, if your cook isn't outside smoking a cigarette looking like he doesn't want to be there, then your food might not be good.
Yeah, 100%.
It's like, you know, it's a balancing scale of that. So, but she took me to this place in the city of Atlanta. I want to say it was called First Watch, and it was the best breakfast food that I've had.
Really?
And yeah, I mean, it was pricey. It was definitely pricey, but I was like, this is worth it.
I love good breakfast food. Even like some of the chains, like another Broken Egg is okay, but like give me Big Bad Breakfast like every day. Like that it's pricey, but it is outstanding. And the sliding scale, totally related. I tell people all this all the time. Okay. Because I used to go to New Orleans a lot. Never lived there, but I went a lot and ate there a lot. I mean, look at me. I like food. It's a thing. for listeners, you can go find us on YouTube. But there's a direct correlation between how sketchy a restaurant looks in New Orleans and how good the food is. It's a direct correlation. If you are a little scared and intimidated to walk into a place, you gotta go because the food's banging. Because that's just the way it is.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I mean, I think that's how it is here, and I'm just like, all right, you know, like I don't know, like some of my favorite places. I think some of my friends are like, man, this looks sketch as hell.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just like, trust me, it's good. Just trust me.
We up
and like
oh no, go ahead.
Oh no, but it's funny because like there was one time Xander, he was going to check out this Les Paul, which man, I should have taken a photo of that because he was about to buy. I want to say it was a 70 something or maybe 60. No, it was definitely 70s. It wasn't in the 60s, or maybe 80s. But he was going, and so we went to this other restaurant and we met up with our friends. We met up with Tia and Jade and. We're like, all right, we're going to get some food. You know, we're going to go, you know, Waffle House or whatever. But the Waffle or whatever it was moved.
Oh, no.
And so we went to this Thai restaurant. And I was like, I'm not the biggest Thai fan, but whatever. And then I realized, I was like, oh, I'm going with Xander. He has expensive taste. So
you know,
like,
it's going
to
be good.
We went to this super nice restaurant. And I was like, if anybody's seen us, that's how we usually dress all the time. Like, we're very rarely like, you know, suit and tie. Like, we look like. We looked out of place and the food was decent. The food was really decent. And I was like, this broke my equation. Like this restaurant was like, looks super nice. And the food is pretty decent. The portions are a little smallish. Yeah, a little small, but I was like,
there was a time my wife and I were in New Orleans and it was late and we were in a section that I can't remember if we were in the North Quarter, if we were around Frenchman Street anyway. And we were about to look for something to eat. And we were looking at places on our phone. I was like, I don't know anything in this area. We're way outside, like my area of expertise of what I know. And we started to go somewhere and a guy actually stopped us and said, are you going to such and such? I can't remember the name of it. He said, yeah, don't go there. You want to go to this place. And he started walking down the end of the street. And started talking to him. And I can't remember the name of the restaurant because my memory is trash, but I've got his business card around somewhere. And he was basically, this guy was the front of house manager at one of New Orleans' most, like, it's the hardest restaurant to get a reservation in New Orleans. And that's where he worked front of house. And he was the front of house, like manager, like second in charge of the restaurant behind the chef. And he was going down to this place and he said, no, you want the food in here. Walked up to it. And I'm like, that's not a restaurant. He said, trust me. And so walk in. He said, go in, go all the way to the back. You're going to see a door in the back. They'll take your order back there. And I did. And we straight up walked into this gay bar in the quarter. In either the North Quarter or Frenchman Street, walked all the way to, you know, no problem, walk through. And it's literally like one of those old barn style doors that where the top half opens in and then the bottom half is still there. You know, I can't remember the proper word for the doors. And the guy just looked at me and said, yeah, what do you want? I said, do you have a menu? And he like pointed on the wall like it was in, you know, a laminated paper menu. We ordered it. We sat there and ate, talked to some other folks, and I'd be damned if that food wasn't so good. Just, it's like, you do not know it's there unless you know. If you know, you know. And it's like, that's where the best food is. That's always where the best food is.
That kind of reminds me of Summer Nam, like, because Emily, she took us to Martin's, only because, one, it was right across the street from the hotel.
Right.
And two, I was like, Martin's, guitar, barbecue. Okay. Yeah. And the food was good.
I love Martin's Barbecue.
Really good.
Yeah, they've got real. And the lines are long for a reason sometimes.
The lines were long, and I was just like, I remember everybody else was ordering these plates, and they didn't think it was going to be a lot of food. And Emily was joking, like, oh, you just go ahead and get the big plate. Go ahead. I was like, all right. And I did. And I ate everything on it. And I was like, and everybody's just like getting full off of their plates. And they're like, oh man. And I was like, yeah. No, I paid for this. This is going down. So, I mean, but it's also weird that you like, it's funny. Cause, if I was in that place with New Orleans with you, I probably would have felt a little sketch myself, but only for different reasons. Cause it's like, are we in the 1950s and I got to go around back and ask for you? So it's just
I get it. And that's, it's just one of those weird things, especially, you know, New Orleans holds a special place in my heart, and just that it's that kind of gritty. It's that kind of, things are in back alleys, you know, like the main entrance for a super nice restaurant may be in an alley. That's just the way it works. You know, it's such an old city. Streets were built for certain sizes because that's what existed then, you know. There's no four-lane roads going through Maine, the heart of New Orleans.
Thankfully.
Yeah, thankfully. And you got to be a special type of person to sit there and live through hurricane after hurricane after hurricane in New Orleans. If I got any New Orleanian listeners, I love your city, and I love the fact that you're willing to stay there, because it's crazy. But we got completely sidetracked. So you talked about that we were Jazzmasters, Star Trek, and food. That's how we got here. Yeah. I can't believe I remember that. Jazzmasters are an interesting, we're gonna circle around the guitar. I know that some
okay,
of y'all,
that's fine.
I know some of my listeners were like, guys, it's been like over half an hour. Y'all haven't even talked about guitars yet. We're getting there.
We're getting there. Get warmed up.
Stop hollering at me. So Jazzmaster thing. Mm-hmm. I was so late to the Jazzmaster game. And like, I got one because I got it at a screaming deal from a pawn shop. I've got this 08 classic player and got it home. It had a dead pickup. I had bought new pickups, which is fine because the pickups that came in the classic players aren't like true Jazzmaster pickups anyway. They're glorified P90s.
They are.
And by which I mean they're sort of P90s, but lose all the great things I love about P90s. They're just kind of bland. So I changed those out, played it for, still had the plastic on the pick guard. I bought this guitar in like 2018 and it's an 08 and still had the plastic on the pick guard, in a pawn shop. But after that, I was like, the moment I played the Jazzmaster vibrato, I was like, that's it. That's what I want. That's exactly what I want. Cause I'd been a Bigsby guy. I still have several guitars with Bigsby's. A Strat is fine as long as it's set up properly. And by properly, I don't mean decked. I mean, I need it to float, which can be a little problematic. But once I tried, and then from there, I bought a Novo earlier this year. I actually placed the order last year, bought direct from Novo, and the mastery that's in that. It's like, why does anyone get a different vibrato? That offset vibrato is the perfect vibrato.
I'm going to need you to cut that part and send it to Tia. Because we filmed an episode the other day, and I was like, you know, I was like, in the middle of it, I was like, yeah, I'm a little bougie. I got used to the Mastery vibrato, so ooh, this vibrato. And she was like, well, I'm not. And
but that Mastery vibrato is a piece of freaking art on its own. It's...
Yeah.
We'll be right back. If you love good music and good podcasts, you'll love Roots Music Rambler. I'm Jason Falls. My co-host Francesca Folinazzo and I talk to the singers, songwriters, musicians, and more in Americana, alt-country, bluegrass, folk, blues, and beyond. We share our own takes on the latest news in the space and recommend new music for you to explore every episode. Come get to the roots of the music you love. Find us at rootsmusicrambler.com or go wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to Roots Music Rambler.
I don't know.
It's so smooth.
Yeah.
Sorry, I cut you off.
No, please do. So this is, for those of you on YouTube, this is my Novo. I love this guitar. And this is the mastery that we're talking about. And I have tuned this. I have had rehearsals every weekend for the last month, and I play this guitar as my primary guitar sitting in the studio here. I have tuned this guitar once in 3.5 weeks. Wow. And it is in tune. As much as I use the vibrato arm, pull up, push down, dive bomb it, it's in tune. I rarely have to tune this guitar. I cannot say that about any other vibrato. I've had Floyd Roses. I've had decked Strats. I've had, you know, Bigsby's. We don't even talk about Bigsby's. I love the Bigsby. But sometimes I just like flawed things.
No, that's fine. Because, like, I've had both good and bad experiences with the Jazzmaster vibrato. Like, the cheaper Squire ones, and I don't say this as a dig at Squire, because I love Squire. Sure. And a lot of my guitars are Squire. Wow, I just sound like the guy. One of my friends are black. But, but no, like, it's just, like, you take for granted the vibrato assembly until you start playing with different ones and you find the one that you like, and then trying to go back to another one, it's like, oh man, this does not feel right. This feels like on the guitar we reviewed, that was my negative. I was just like, the vibrato, like, I don't like these. But oh man, yeah. So yeah, he jumped on the Jazzmaster game late. Like,
I way late. Like, I'd been playing, so in 2018, I've been playing guitar for 19 years before I got a Jazzmaster. And and so I've got that classic player, it's one of these back here, I don't know which, without looking behind me, I'm at a crossroads with that guitar now that I've had the Mastery vibrato. I'm like, okay, I need to either sell this guitar, which I've listed it for sale a couple of times and then backed out of it every time, or I need to upgrade the vibrato on that guitar. Because, and that's not a small investment. The Mastery's not cheap.
No, it's not. If you upgrade the bridge as well, it's $400. Yeah.
I know, which is, you know, that's like half the price of the guitar right there. Yeah. So it's like, do I go this far? Do I really? And changing out the bridge on the classic player is not fun either, because you have to pull the ferrules out, because it's got the Tune-O-Matic in there and it doesn't have the standard Jazzmaster bridge. So it's an ordeal. It's a whole thing. Yeah.
It's not fun.
No.
But I mean, I don't know, to sort of add to that, like, it's funny, because I would say I was late but early to the Jazzmaster game, because growing up, I was always a huge Incubus fan. And Mike Einzinger was one of my biggest influences growing up. And I remember when he switched from PRS to Fender initially in like 03, 04, and he was playing a Jazzmaster. And I was like, man, that guitar is so cool. I want one. Like, you know, I want to get one. But I couldn't afford it. So yeah. It's just like, you know. And then Squire, a few years after, came out with the first vintage modify before the J-Masters. It was the Butterscotch one. And it didn't have the proper vibrato assembly. It didn't have a vibrato assembly at all. It just had the, Dan Electro-style bridge.
Oh.
And I mean, it was a cool guitar. I think it was one of the best. It was the first time that I'd seen a maple neck on a Jazzmaster, and the color combination of it being butterscotch with a black guard was just, I was like, man, this is awesome. And I played it and I loved it. And then I was like, all right, I'm into a Jazzmaster. And then, I want to say it was either the Blacktop or no, it was the class. It was a made in Japan Jaguar, and I got one of those from this first music store I worked at, and I got it for like $300. And I just remember playing around with the vibrato assembly and just like trying to like do like My Bloody Valentine type stuff, and just being like, I love this so much. And then I was like, but man, I love the sound of the Jazzmaster. So, you know, I waited a couple of years until I could afford, you know, a Jazzmaster with that vibrato assembly. And I've never looked back since. Like, the Jazzmaster has been like my main guitar. And it's, to me, it does everything that I need it to do.
Yeah.
For a little bit, when my friend Chris Lint, ungodly good drummer, and I just saw him play the other night, and I was like, this dude is beating the hell out of this kit. And But I remember we were trying to like, not trying. We did write some heavy stuff. And I remember getting a Jay Mascus at the time, like the first time. And it was, and when I say, I don't mean the Squire.
Yeah.
I mean the Jay Mascus, like the Made in Japan. And I remember like tuning it down to drop B, and my guitar tech at the time being like, what are you doing? Like, I was like, no, I know what I'm doing. And it handled it like a champ.
Wow.
And it was fun. It was just like, ever since then, like, I love the neck on the Jazzmaster. I love the scale length. That's what I mean when I say I refer to the neck. It's more so I love the scale length.
Yeah, yeah.
I love the sound. I love the bobbins. And I mean, I love the, not the bobbins, because I was thinking the P90, what you said earlier about the classic player. And I was like, oh, they just have different pole position in the bottom. But so I've been hooked ever since. I mean, Jazzmaster to me is the perfect instrument. And when I found out that Tia loved the Jazzmaster as well, I was like, we're going to be best friends. and it was like, here we are hosting a YouTube show together.
So Jazzmaster, here's the controversial: rhythm circuit or no rhythm circuit? This is the fight. This is the fight. Not with me.
I don't know people like this.
I'm so okay with either one. Just so we're going to be friends no matter what you say.
Like, I think a lot of people assume that I'm a vintage purist, and I'm not. Like I've said in a couple of our reviews, I'm okay with Fender doing away with like the vibrato assembly and the rhythm circuit to kind of give like a new take on the Jazzmaster, because I understand they're for people, like when they make like the American Performer, for instance,
right?
That one gets a lot of flack online. Like I don't see a lot of people in the forums like singing it praises, and then I also don't think a lot of them have played it, because I was like, I own one, and I bought it with the intention of just doing this review and returning it, but I ended up loving it, and I was just like, this thing is awesome. Like I loved it a lot more than the Ultra, and
that's saying something.
Like, yeah, you know, it sounds a lot better than the Ultra, and
those Ultras are serious guitars.
And it's just like, but at the same time, like, I get it. Like, it's not a traditional Jazzmaster, and I think that's fine. However, on the other hand, I have a parts caster where the pickups and the electronics are from a 64 or 67 that I had. And the neck is from a Troy Van Leeuwen, and it's mastery everything. So it's just like, you know, and that's my number one. So I kind of ride both sides of it. Like, it really just depends on the Jazzmaster. Like, I haven't played too many of the recent Player Series Jazzmasters with the humbuckers. The couple that I've played, I've kind of been dismissive of, only because the setups on them in the store that they were at wasn't that great. But then I went to another local store, and they had a FSR version that looked like the Elvis Costello, which I'm jealous of Emily because she has one.
She has one now.
I'm so jealous. But you know, I played that, and they had it set up, and I was just like, okay, this is cool. I was like, I would change the humbuckers, but it's cool,
right?
And then for a little bit, the much coveted Squire baritone Jazzmaster, which I recently sold, and I hate myself for doing that, but life happens.
Sure.
I can appreciate every Jazzmaster. I can appreciate something about every Jazzmaster, and that's kind of how I approach it. I don't think there's a wrong or right way. Like, you have the whole vintage purists who are like, well, if it doesn't have a rhythm circuit, it doesn't have the vibrato, it's not a Jazzmaster. And I'm like, well, Fender made it, and if they say it's a Jazzmaster, it's a Jazzmaster. So, you know,
it's a good point. That's a good point.
Like, so, yeah, it's like, so, I mean, I could appreciate everything. I think, like I said, to me, the Jazzmaster is my favorite guitar, and I would be lying if I said that and I couldn't appreciate the different variants of the Jazzmaster. It's like saying, hey, Tellys are my favorite, but screw a thin line. Like, to me, it's just like, it makes no sense. Like, no.
If it's got a humbucker in the bridge, it's not a Telecaster.
Yeah. I don't get those people, because it's just like, oh yeah, well, what about, you know, it's like, well, if it says whatever it says on the headstock, that's what I'm going with.
That's exactly so, right. I'm actually a big fan of humbucker in the neck position for a Telecaster. I love that sound.
You know what? For a little bit, I wasn't.
Really?
Until I played the Squire John 5. Mm-hmm. And I was like, holy crap, this is amazing. And
for me, it's who was it? Oh, it's the this is one of those moments where I'm completely losing. I wanted to say Jeff Beck, and Jeff Beck's known for Strat, but maybe it is Jeff Beck I'm thinking. Or maybe it was Keith Richards, but would always swap to that humbucker in the neck position. And as someone who spent the first like 15 years of my life using the neck pickup almost exclusively on every guitar I ever played, I love that warm sound of a humbucker in the neck position, and I love Telecasters. It's not my main guitar anymore, but there's something about being able to get that, because the normal neck position of a Telecaster, I think, is an acquired taste. It is. Yeah. It's a different sound.
Which is funny, because I love the neck position on a Telecaster. Like, yeah. I love it. Like, I don't know how to explain it. It's like, I think I'm weird because I have a hard time getting along with the bridge on a lot of Telecasters, and that's what everybody goes to.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, oh, I love the neck.
Yeah. For a long time, just in general, bridge position on any guitar was really difficult for me to get behind. Part of it's, you know, when you're learning guitar and you're in a room by yourself and you're not playing with a band, you want that low end a little bit to fill in the space. It makes sense. But even when I got to where I was playing with bands, I wanted that rounder sound. I didn't want that ear piercing, you know, bright. I wanted my, like when I took solos or when I played leads, I didn't want to feel like and sound like they were above the band. I wanted to sound like it was part of the band. And it's like, that's just the way I always looked at it. It's a weird way to look back on and be like, oh, but now I'm like, oh, bridge pickups are fine. I love bridge pickups.
See, it depends on the guitar. It really does, because like again, another Squire plug, the vintage modified Jazzmasters, when they had the Duncan design pickups,
yeah,
loved them, but I hated the bridge. It was just too ice picky and too ear piercing. Like, I was just not a fan. And but however, you know, there's certain guitars where it's just like, I can accept it. Like on my Tele, which I installed a four-way, it's just like, man, but you know, being able to use the bridge on that, I'm like, this sounds amazing. Like, but it just depends on the guitar, because like I don't know, like it really just depends, because like I do love the bridge on a Strat, and I have not played a Strat where I was just like, all right, I don't love the, you know, I don't like the bridge position. I don't, you know, I can't, you know, I see myself using it. However, on the Gibson side of things, very picky. Like, I think the 335, by far Gibson's best guitar. Don't care what anybody says. they can fight me on that.
I have a different favorite, but it's just for different reasons. It's not, I think it's their most versatile guitar for sure.
Yeah, and it's just like, well, that was one that I was just like, okay, all three positions sound great.
Yep.
And it's just like, I find this guitar useful. And it doesn't hurt that I owned a 64 335. So that's kind of my bar for every guitar. So, you know.
And that's unfair. That's just not
fair. I know, it is. It's super unfair. And like, I'm willing to admit that. And, but. You know, it is what it is. Like, on that end, like I think in terms of the bridge pickup, it just depends on the guitar.
Yeah. With my Jazzmaster, the pickups I've got in it are the Fender 65 Pure Vintage. They're good pickups. But it's a bright guitar. The whole 1 meg capacitor, we're getting real nerdy. I'm real sorry if you're not into the nerdiness of capacitor or potentiometer capacitance or anything like that. But it's got 1 meg potentiometers, and so it lets a lot of high end through, doesn't roll a lot of it to ground. I'm actually thinking about, and I'll run this by you because this you're a Jazzmaster guy. I'm thinking about, so my Novo is my main guitar. Like, it's the best guitar I've ever played. I will preach at their church every Sunday. Like, this is, they are the church that I proselytize. The Novos are, there's something about the necks on them, and they're built right. They're light. I mean, this guitar is, it's massive, and it weighs 7 pounds. You know what I mean? Oh, wow. If it's 7 pounds, maybe just under seven. But it, I've been thinking about with my Jazzmaster, which right now I've got it tuned down to D standard, which I think it sounds really good in D standard, but it's still a little ice picky in the bridge position. I bought a pick guard for P90s in it, and I made sure that it was deep enough that it could take a P90 because, you know, Jazzmaster pickups are real thin. And I'm thinking about swapping it to P90, three-way switch, volume and tone. That's it. And if I do that, that's also, by the time I'm done swapping out, I'll spend $600 in upgrades on a $700 guitar. You know what I mean? But
I would buy a cheap guitar. Like, I am the buy a cheap and upgrade the hell out of it with the assumption of that I'm not going to sell it. Because then it's just like, you don't get shit back.
No.
Like,
and see, that's what would happen is if I did all that, assuming I'm not going to sell, obviously I haven't sold it yet. And even though I've put it up for sale a couple times, I've backed out every time, you know, keep the original parts, be able to swap it back if you want to. You know, I wouldn't be changing anything that couldn't be undone. That's the beauty of the pick guard and it being deep enough already for P90s. But I don't know it for, I've backed off it a little bit. First of all, the cost of a mastery is so expensive. I guess the only part that might be difficult is when I put in the mastery. If I put in the mastery bridge, I may not be able to get the original bridge back on it.
I mean, but at the same time, a Jazzmaster with a mastery, typically you can, that's the one mod that I've seen people get more out of. Like, it's like, oh, it has a mastery, so I can actually charge extra and, like, no one's really going to, like, hassle me about it.
Yeah.
I would say that's a cool idea. I mean, if you know what pickups you like and you know what sound you're going for, then go for it. I'm all for modding and experimenting, and I'm all for chasing the tonal dragon.
Yeah.
So, I told Tia the other day, I was like, giving away the review. I'm typically a fan of the, like you, I'm not a big fan, which is weird to say, of a super bright Jazzmaster.
Yeah.
I can work with it, but I prefer the era of the Alnico 2 magnets, which was the 58.
Gotcha.
Because I love the more darker tone of that. Like, that era is my favorite. So I preach at the Church of Duncan Antiquities, and I will always preach that. But however, they're lower output, so they're not, you know, it's typical 50s Fender sound. Like, you know, it's not meant to be like super bright, and you know, it's a good pickup set. So if you're going to go with the P90s from there and try it, I would say I'd say do it. Cause I mean, if you can reverse all of that, if need be, then
yeah, there's no good reason not to. Yeah. Yeah. I may have to do it. We'll see if I can't scrounge up some money. Right now, the funds for gear it's dry. It's dry for a little bit. This year has been gear extravagance, and I need to rein it all in for a little bit. I'm actually in the middle of unloading a few things. I've got a couple of things I want, like, right now, and I've done very good in the last few months about reining it all in. But it's very, if something's coming in, some stuff has to go out. Like, if some stuff has to leave, you can't.
I've reached that crossroads.
Yeah,
I've reached that crossroads too, and it's just like, well, for me, it was just I had a bunch of little stuff on my car add up to a big price tag.
Ooh.
So I was just like, all right, I got to move some gear around. But at the same time, I realized that I'm not a fan of short scale guitars in terms of neck. So got rid of my Mustang, got rid of my Jaguar, and I was just like, all right, you know, I was like, I've always had an issue with the neck, and I was like, you know, I think as musicians, we just go through this time, like, unless you're like Joe Bonamassa and you just have a museum full of gear.
and the funds to support it.
Yeah, and the funds to support it. I think we just all go through like our times where we go, what I call the purge, where it's just like, all right, we're going to purge this, and this. And like, for me with guitars, it's easy to do. Because it's like, all right, I don't like this. It's like I said, for me, the Jazzmaster is the perfect guitar. So none of my Jazzmasters are going anywhere. And it's funny because like, for me, I think, also being a big pedal guy, I'm just like, if it's not on my board, then it's, you know, if it's not on my board and it's not my Iridium, then, it's up for grabs. Like, you know, it's perpetually on the chopping block. And, only because I use the Iridium as like my amp sim for recording demos and stuff.
That makes sense. It's a tool. It's not a pedal. Yeah. It's a tool that you need. Yeah. So
Exactly. So, I mean, I think we all go through like our phase of extravagance, and then it's just like, oh man, I guess the way think of it, cause like the other day I took my gear and when I was selling it and like a couple of my coworkers were like, Jason, why are you selling it? I was like, cause I like money. I like money. I like having money. And I was like, I like money more than I like a Mustang and a Jaguar. So
makes sense. So,
and you know, yeah. And they're like, oh, okay. And I was like, yeah, I was like, you know, I think we're all like, we all find the area in the gear. Like I know a lot of like Xander, he's a huge gear nut. Like he has like where we film the show is his basement. And a lot of that is his gear.
Wow.
Like,
That amp wall behind y'all is impressive.
Yeah. Yes. And he just ordered, a Rockerverb, a Mark One Rockerverb combo. Oh. And it's just like, that dude is oranged out.
He is. That's an impressive array of orange amps and orange style amps.
Yeah. But it's just like, you know, he's found his like his area of what he likes. And I think that's cool because it's just like, for me, I know I'm more so into pedals. Like I know which, like I said, I know which guitar I like.
Right.
I know why I like that, but I'm more so into the collecting pedals and like, because the way I explained it to you, which is funny again, because Xander has a crap ton of pedals as well, but he's not really a big pedal guy.
Right.
He likes a lot of dry pedals. And I'm on the opposite end where I'm like, I like a lot of reverb pedals. And like,
I've seen your board. I've seen your board.
Yeah. Yeah. but I've had this discussion with a couple of customers, and I was like, here's the thing. I love pedals. I love collecting pedals, and I love everything about pedals. However, the reason why reverb will always be my favorite, it's because it's the one pedal where people are exploring new algorithms and new sounds, whereas everything else is mimicking a sound from something else. Like, like, you know, drives, there are certain types, either it's a clone copy or, you know, tube screamer copy, some kind of copy, you know, and choruses, we have our favorites. And, you know, that's why, if you notice, like, when a lot of people ask, like, well, what, you know, you're a big Strymon fan, you're a big, you know, Chase Bliss fan, you're a big, you know, Old Blood Noise. I was like, yeah, because they all do something different. Like, they do something that, you know, is new, for lack of a better term. And, you know, that's not to say there's nothing wrong with that. You know, with the other side of that, like I think in the case of drives, like, funny story, Tia and I, like when we started this channel, we were not, it's not like we intentionally stayed away from drive pedals.
Yeah.
We just weren't the biggest fan.
Sure.
So, we got sent a bunch of different drive pedals to check out and we fell in love with them. Like, we recently filmed the review for the Benson preamp and the 1981. And those are two of the best drives that I've heard in my life.
That Benson preamp, I had one for a little bit on my board, actually for a good while. And the only reason I moved it, it was not that I did not still love it, but I had a couple of other things doing similar things, even though, I don't know, that thing is something special. But I had also never owned a Timmy. And everybody talks about that circuit. And someone offered me a trade for a V2 Timmy for my Benson, and so I made the trade, and I've still got the Timmy. It's on a board right down here, and that's one of those pedals won't be going anywhere. It's not going
to. No, and that's the thing. Like for me, that's how I feel about the 1981. Because when I was like, all right, is it worth the hype? Like, you know, everybody's hyped this up. And then I was like, oh, it's supposed to be this. Yeah. It's like, and then I played it and I was like, oh, this is not a rat. Like this is like, oh yeah, it's just, I was like, cause I told Xander, I was like, I'm not the biggest fan of rat titles.
Me either.
I was like, I don't know what I'm doing with this 1981, but I played it and I was just like, this thing is so musical. I can use this in almost anything that I do. And like, I remember the first time in band practice that I used it, and keep in mind at the time our bassist was playing through the PA, so I was pretty much above him in volume. And I just remember, like, you know, just turning around and just being like, this is like I remember my tone, like everybody complimenting my tone on the song we were practicing. Well, not everybody, just my drummer and like the other guitarist.
Yeah.
And he liked that sound so much that, which was the other guitarist is Justin. he liked that sound so much he went out and bought a 1981.
Yeah.
But yeah, you just find pedals like that that you just like. I want to play a Timmy. Like if you're listening and you feel generous, hook me up with a link.
Yeah.
That is very cheap. Because I right now am still paying off this car expense. So
no, feel that. Actually, it's funny. We talked about this and we're actually approaching time and we're going to wrap this up and go over and continue this conversation. We'll just pick up where we are on the Patreon episode of the podcast. So those of you that are listening that want to hear the rest of us completely nerding out about pedals, that's going to continue over on the Patreon episode. We're going to talk about drives. We're going to talk about the what I call the accumulation and purge phases. I think it's definitely a whole like tide thing. It's like it comes in, then it goes out, and then that's how you find what you love. But
it is.
We actually were originally going to try to do this episode in person. Haven't been able to get away because you're obviously over in Atlanta. I'm in Mississippi. We're not that far apart. What we ought to do, we ought to find a weekend. Where I pack up some of the gear I've got, bring it over, and we just set up and have a crazy day of going through everything we've all got. Because I've got some stuff that I'd like you to try out.
I would be all about that.
Yeah.
So this is funny because thank you. Tia and I, because we've gotten a few questions about doing a rig rundown type thing. And I was like, I kind of think at our level, that's kind of pretentious. Like, I was like, yeah, like people really want to see our rig. Like,
yeah.
They don't really know who we are. And it's just like, you know, to me, it's kind of cringe level. But I told her, I was like, if we do it, we have to think of a different way. And I think you just hit the nail on the head. Yeah. Of like, hey, you bring your rig. I bring mine. She brings hers. Xander, we just go to Xander since he's not moving his.
Right, yeah, his ain't going anywhere.
Yeah, his ain't going anywhere, and we all just like we try out each other's rigs.
Yeah, and I've got gear that like, and last because I want to save some for the episode where you're talking about your amp sim thing. I use a HX Stomp for that same thing, and right now I'm trying to sell my HX Stomp because to be honest, I've gotten to a point now where I like amps. I love having all those options, and that's great. But I'm at a point now where now that the Boss IR200 is out, I feel like that's way more what I need for like those times when I need to go direct than like the power of the HX Stomp, because I have got, you know, I've got a Two Rock. I've talked about it on the podcast before. I've got a Two Rock traditional clean. That's that super power Fender sound. I've got a divided by 13 AMW 39, which is that whole Marshall Plexi thing. I do have an AC30 that is technically for sale. I want to get a, it's a combo. Yeah, you work in a music store. You've picked up an AC30 before.
I'm pretty sure I've hurt my back because of that.
Yeah. I don't want to do it anymore. So I want that flavor amp, but in a head. I want a head and cab situation and not a full combo situation. Some people are like, oh, then you got to carry two things. Yeah. Two lighter things.
Yeah. If you ever put an AC30 in a road case and then tried to carry that.
Oh my. I have a 2x12 road case that I've put it in. And it's like, it is one of the worst experiences ever. I'll go back to my rack full of PVCS 800 PA gear before I'll do that. It's so heavy.
Dude, I had a twin for a while, and what I would do is I would take it out of the road case, because like we practice in my basement, and I would go up the stairs with the road case by itself, and then with the amp by itself, because like together was just too much.
Yeah, it's just it's a lot of weight. It's a lot of amp. I love the AC30 sound. I love that sound. So I want that in my, to me, that's the trio of amps. That's what I need. I need a strong Fender flavor. I need a Marshall flavor, and I need an AC30 flavor. And once I'm good there, I don't need the 4 million amps that are in the HX Stomp. So I'm going to go that route, but yeah, I could bring, you know, the 2 Rock and the divided by 13, and we could, you know, try out all these different amps. And of course, Xander's got all his oranges, and I am very, very not well-versed in orange amps. I've owned one orange amp.
He will school you in the world of orange. Like, there was one orange that he got recently, like a limited edition 8030. And I didn't know it was limited edition. And like, we just used it, and I was just like, holy crap, this is awesome.
Yeah.
Cause like, He's probably going to hate me for saying this or wording this because we used to use his Rocker 30, and I wasn't the big fan of the Rocker 30, like only because I like an amp to have, which is funny because the amp that I have now doesn't have reverb, but I like for it to have a little bit of reverb.
Yeah.
But it's like that's gone out the window because I was like, well, it's like I have this matchless, and I'm like, it's a matchless, so I don't care.
Yeah. Matchless.
It's
another.
Going to sound good.
Yep. Absolutely. And does your matchless have an effects loop?
No
effects.
It's the Nighthawk 15 combo.
That's interesting.
It's piss loud. Yeah, it is piss loud. Like I thought for a 15 watt amp, like I'm looking at it like, you motherfucker, like you, like it's just like, yeah, it's loud.
Yeah,
it's way louder than I thought an amp could. It's the loudest 15 watt amp I've ever heard.
And it probably stays cleaner than you expected it to.
Yeah. Yeah. It stays super clean at like, it has more headroom than I thought it would. Cause, my friend Steven, he has a DC 30 and,
I hate your friend Steven.
Oh, wait till you see his gear. His gear is just, yeah, he's one of those guys. Like he has gear. And it's just like everything he has is good.
I had a Jackson Ampworks Newcastle 18. So a little head, volume and tone. That's it. No reverb, no effects loop, no nothing. And I played it through a 112. It's through the Jackson Ampworks 1x12 that has the dual ported cab. Mm-hmm. By the way, it is the best 112 cab on the market. I don't care what anybody says. I've not played a 112 cab that sounded that big. But 18 watts. I was like, oh, you know, this is like less than a deluxe reverb. And I've played lots of deluxe reverbs where I'm breaking them up by like 4. And like, you know what I mean? I had to turn that thing up to 10 to get it to break up. It was so clean through most of that amp's travel in the volume that I was like, this breaks everything I know about low wattage tube amps. Like this should be breaking. I had a Victoria, Tweed Deluxe. They're 2112. And that thing would break up at like 3.5, you know, and that amp's 12, 14 watts somewhere in that realm. So everybody's like, oh, well, low wattage breaks up earlier. Yeah, you need to back up. Cause that statement does not hold water all the time.
No, like I remember when I had an OR15, and I was just like, oh, you know, this and this, you know, but that thing broke up. Like if I turned it at 1, it was, you know,
it was
like,
dirty.
It was dirty. Like that amp stayed dirty. And I was just like, all right, low wattage amps, you know, I can't do that. And then I remember getting, a Princeton and trying it for band practice, which was a horrible mistake because we're a loud ass band. And I was like, this thing is like the speaker's farting out and like, it's just not holding together. And I'm like, yeah, that was a bad mistake. And then, I got a deluxe and I was like, I don't know, you know, this is going to, and a deluxe was fine.
Yeah.
Deluxe was fine. It was fine. And then, Jeff Bakos, the great and famous Jeff Bezos, like amp modder, amp repair guy extraordinaire. Because mine shipped with 6 V6s, and I think the cool mod that he did was a 6L6. So it gave it a little bit more wattage and a little bit more headroom. Damn, it sounded great. And I was like, that thing stayed clean.
Yeah, and that's the trick, and that's where I like amps to be. Even the divided by 13, which the cool thing about that amp is the way that he designed those is that Fred over at divided by 13, there is an effects loop. He does not like effects loops. He put this in begrudgingly in these amps, but I do use it. I have a reverb pedal in that effects loop because you will understand. I have a bass level of reverb. Like there's never a time I don't have reverb. There's never ever a time. And then I'll add reverb on top of that if I want. But there's
I understand. Yeah. That's my trick. I like blending different reverb. I like stacking reverbs.
Yeah.
So I understand.
So, but the cool thing about that amp is through the it's a plexi, and I didn't have a plexi. I had a 71, which was aluminum faceplate, but still the same circuit. I had a 71 super bass, 100 watts. And the tone stack on that was basically for show. like 1 to 10 on the tone control didn't really even the it was a three band, treble mids highs or treble mids lows. You just crank them to 10. You really do. You just turn them to 10 because that's the only way you're going to get the gain that you want. And it's not even high gain. But that's the only way they do anything. The only way you get any real tone difference is when you jumper the channels and use the volumes to get a little more treble or a little more low end. And
kind of like the Vox trick, like, you know, where you can just jump the channels
and get that top boost. Yeah. Coming in.
Yeah.
That's exactly. So you can do that in this amp because it's got actual usable tone circuit and it's got a very good master volume. So you can crank the master volume and just use the preamp volume and treat it like a no master volume amp, or you can dial the master volume back and it gets into like JCM 800 territory as you crank that volume up. So you can do the plexi thing. It can do the JCM 800 thing. And such a cool amp.
I want to get a Blues Breaker Marshall. Just when I'm older and I have the disposable income and I'm just like, you know, cause I don't see myself getting married. because she's probably gonna be like, oh, well, if she ever asked me to choose between her or the gear, I'm like, get out.
Gonna miss her.
I was like, I'm gonna miss you. But it was like, I'm not giving up the Jazz Masters.
Yeah.
Marshalls are, my roommate, bandmate, Mike, he's a big Marshall fan. He had a JMP from the 70s.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah. And that is the one amp, like, he sold and he has regretted ever since. And it's just like,
the 71 super bass, away. The 71 super bass is. There's a couple that I'm like, oh yeah, that'd be cool to have back. But the only one I've ever like truly, truly regretted was that 71 super bass. I should have never gotten rid of it ever, ever, ever. And I was actually looking for a Blues Breaker when I found this divided by 13. It found me actually. I had something for sale that by my estimations was worth a good bit less than this amp. And the guy offered me the trade. And so I was like, I'd be an idiot to turn this down. I'd be a complete idiot. But it just is what it is. Well, let's wrap up. We went on another like 15 minutes after I said we're gonna wrap up. So who knows what's going to happen in the Patreon episode. Y'all, I really appreciate y'all listening. I really appreciate y'all sticking around, watching this video if you're watching on YouTube. I appreciate you holding out for the nerding out, the guitar nerdery, as Joe Branton over at the Guitar Nerds likes to say. Jason, I really appreciate you taking time, hanging out with me. We're going to hang out some more.
We've got to hang out more.
Yes, we got to hang out more and we've got to get together and we'll film some content at some point. That'll be really a fun time.
Yes.
But in the meantime, for the main episode, I want y'all to do me a favor. Y'all be good to yourselves, be kind to each other, and pick up a guitar and make some noise. Peace.
This episode is brought to you by the supporters of 40 Watt Podcast over on Patreon. Go over to patreon.com/40wattpodcast, where for as little as $3 per month, you can help support the podcast and get every episode ad-free. For $5 a month, you'll get every episode ad-free, as well as a bonus episode every week. I can't overstate how thankful I am for the support of my patrons, and hope you'll consider joining the team and helping keep this show on the road.